maybe 10% of that ash that has to be put somewhere. So I think that there should be a lot more looked into in the future, and of course I know that there'll be newer methods coming along, but as far as recycling any of this material and handling this material other than a lagoon or the present dump site.
Were you happy as most of the people were when the lagoon site was voted
down?
Yes,
I felt that maybe we just got maybe just a little bit excited about deadlines and so forth with the city of Fall River, and I agree EPA is more or less putting a stop to Fall River taking any more of this. But I just couldn't see, because you were polluting the Taunton River in a way, but Fall River is still polluting it. So you might as well continue to pollute one river rather than take and shut off all the different towns and then have them pollute their own river.
Yeah.
So that you'd only end up with having six or seven rivers polluted instead of one. So, I mean, which is the lesser of the evils.
And apparently the East River over here is about the least polluted river in Massachusetts.
Right.
Here we were going to really pollute it thoroughly.
It was very, very possible, and I think that we maybe went off. We just kind of got a little excited here and went off on this. And I'm glad that it didn't go on.
Well, I can see that you've been, I mean, just being on the Board of Health for 16 years sounds like a terrific occupation. What else did you do?
Well, as far as in town at the age of, I forget now if it was 16 or somewhere, I joined the Juvenile Grange. I was a master of the juvenile at that time. Of course, at the age of, I think it was 18, when you were eligible to join the Subordinate Grange, I became a member of that, which I've been a member ever since. I received my 25-year pin a few years ago. I was also a member of the Westport Volunteer Fire Department at the age of 16.
16. We had, when our barn burned in 1957, I don't know whether you were still a member of the barn volunteer fire department then, were you?
I was.
Did you come down here?
No, I don't believe I did. No.
The fire chief was sitting with his... He heard the lightning strike something, and he didn't know what it was. He was just sitting there with his boots on, waiting for a call, when my husband smelled smoke. The barn was up there, and we had a horse in the barn, and the hay was in a mow under the cupola, which was on the barn. And we smelled the smoke, and we got up and walked all around the place, and we didn't see anything. And then suddenly, crash, bang, there was a huge explosion, and the barn just, the fire just, I mean, it couldn't possibly save, but I rushed and called the fire department. And oodles of volunteers, it seemed to me as if the whole town was here.
Well, I was going to say that, I joined this at the age of 16, because I lived very close to the fire station at the time. But during World War II, when I was in high school, especially my last 2 years as a junior and senior, most of the younger fellows were away in the service, and they really had a problem, especially in the daytime hours, to have anyone, because most of the men, of course, were working. So they made an arrangement with the school department that I think there were four of us. At any time when there was a fire, we could just drop our books and leave class and go. And if the fire truck was coming north, we would run out and wait to meet it. If it was going south, we'd start running down the road, and the fire engine would back up. We'd meet halfway in between, and then we'd take off, because it meant either this man going to a fire alone with the truck or waiting a couple of minutes.
Was that Stanley Gifford or who?
At the time, we didn't. Stanley Gifford was the fire chief at the time, but of course, this wasn't a full-time job. Mm-hmm. So that the men, whoever the men were on the station at that time, Gil Santos was one of the permanent men who was on during the day. And the four of us went down to the station about once a week, and we had fire drills so that we know something of what we were doing. And then we were allowed to, like I say, the teachers all knew this, and the minute the siren blew, we could hear the siren, which was on top of the station. They blew it. The number of rings would let us know which direction it was heading, and we could just take and drop our books or whatever we were doing and run. Of course, as a teenager and being in school, I mean, this was great.
Yeah.
This was a
lot more exciting.
This was a way of getting out of school.
Yeah, and who else, who doesn't like to go to a fire if it isn't their own?
Right. We did get paid 50 cents an hour, but I think most every fire that we did go to, especially brush fires and so forth, it cost us about 6 times as much for shoes and pants that were ruined and charred.
Sure.
But I mean, it was just, you know, it was something that as a young boy, evenings or weekends we did hang around the fire station. And it was just something that I liked and got into at an early age. And I am, again, I've received my 25-year membership
as a volunteer.
And this automatically leaves you on as a, you don't have any more dues to pay, and you're automatically a member for the rest of your life.
Yes. Now, let's go back a minute and tell me some of the services that the Grange performed for the town.
Well, unfortunately, I think today, they're maybe not as active. It seems as though the younger people today just have gotten. Of course, years ago, the Grange was something before television and before the transportation that you have today. It was something, a night, an evening, or a weekend, or some place where you could go. They ran dances, they had whist parties, suppers.
They still do a little bit, right.
But I know as a teenager, they were very, very active. And they did have agricultural fairs in the fall where you could bring in different vegetables and so forth and compete for prizes and this type of thing. And actually it was something, a form of entertainment along with the help of the community that, you know, keeps.
Actually, the social life then of the town centered around the Grange
around
at that
the Grange
time.
At that time, yes.
Is there another Grange hall up in Northwest?
Yes, there is. There's one on Old Bedford Road, which has been there many years also.
Because, I mean, I was taping someone the other day whose social life centered around that Grange.
Right.
And who had
as a matter of fact, I used to go to the Grange dances here at Center Village where every Tuesday night the Watupper Grange on Old Bedford Road was on Saturday night, the Acushnet Grange and Acushnet was on Thursday night.
So you went dancing
a
lot.
And I went dancing a lot. In fact, I met my wife at the Watupper Grange dance, and we went there while we were recording and, for a couple of years, and that's where I met her. So the Grange does have quite a bit.
Well, Henry Sampson was telling about the other day. You know him, don't
very
you?
Well, yes.
And he was telling about the Grange up in that end of town and so on. And, on your properties, have you ever, in plowing and all, you when you were farming a little bit, or even vegetables, did you come across Indian remains at all?
Yes, I did. Arrowheads, especially from. Well, not so much in the later years, but years back we found a lot of arrowheads, tomahawk heads, and this type of thing. Yes.
Did you save them?
I did, but to be honest with you, I don't know where a lot of this stuff went to. I think somewhere along the line someone has picked them up. But I even today, some people, when we are plowing or harrowing land, they will come out and ask if they can walk around and see if they can find any of these. But really don't. I haven't found any in several years.
You know. Well, you know, after the ground's worked over and over and over, they're either sunk down in or else they've been picked up. It's hard to get when you can.
Yes, I recall finding a lot of arrowheads when I was a young boy.
Jim Pursh, when I talked with him, he got his some of his things in that perfectly beautiful bowls and all. That he found on his farm up, and apparently it was a camp or site.
Yes.
Where there were so many, and there were other places that were campsites that had, where they had clam bakes and
right.
So on.
Yes, this was another activity that the Grange always had, was a couple of clam bakes every year, and this was a big thing on a Sunday afternoon. It was really one of the big things as far as the social life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The time.
Do you think there's anything that takes its place now?
Well, I guess it's just everything, really. I mean,
with cars,
with the automobiles, mm-hmm. and everything else, and there were so many different organizations that were going out of town. But, like I say, I think.
Do you go? Do you travel?
Not too much. No, I don't really don't have the time to be away from the farm that much.
No, you can't leave cows.
I have, you know, I have. Well, I don't say that I haven't. I've been to Florida, and I've been to Canada. Maine, this type of thing, mm-hmm. New York State, and this type of thing. I've been, well, in the past couple of years, I've traveled a little more. Well, sometimes day trips, sometimes for 2 or 3 days, because I was appointed to the State Agricultural and Stabilization Conservation Committee, which is an appointment that comes down from the Secretary of Agriculture, and there are 3 state committeemen appointed from the state of Massachusetts, and for the last 3 years I have been one of the.
You've been one of the 3, and you've had to travel as part of your
appointed. I've had to travel
appointed.
As part of the appointed job. Mm-hmm. You have to go to Washington occasionally, which I have done, Virginia, and this type of thing. So
is it an interesting job?
It is an interesting.
Must be interesting to get here. You see people from all over the country in a way.
Right, that's right. At least once or twice a year, they'll hold a convention, which will once a year at least they'll hold a convention and have the state committeemen from the entire country, from the whole 50 states,
mm-hmm.
and for a conference maybe of 2 or 3 days. And discuss the agricultural problems in different areas and so forth with the officials in Washington, with the secretary down.
With mm-hmm. well, so, Secretary Butts down to...
Well, right down to the grassroots level of the, the farmer. I mean,
yes.
To be eligible for a position on this committee, you have to be an active farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So with the help and the part-time help that I have been able to get away.
Isn't that great? It'd be... Very exciting to be able to talk over problems with farmers from Nebraska or...
That's right. It sure mm-hmm. certainly is. I mean, you have, all types of agriculture. And to be able, to talk to these fellows who have, know all these problems.
Mm-hmm.
You can exchange ideas and problems. Not only the problems, but what you're trying to do is convince the higher officials in government where the need is and what help, what areas need help in, mm-hmm. in what ways and what can be done to solve some of the problems of the different growers mm-hmm. or whatever. And I started on this as we have a county farmer elected system of county government mm-hmm. as far as agriculture is concerned. And here again, each county in the state of Massachusetts has an elected 3-man board which goes over these problems if there are any. It's not really a subsidy program, but it is a program that helps as far as conserving the land,
mm-hmm.
conserving anything that would go into permanent vegetative cover, also forestry practices.
Mm-hmm. I'm a tree farmer.
You're a tree farmer.
Did you know? Yes. And the state helped. We bought very for almost nothing, and
Soil
they helped
us. Conservation Service.
Well, it's I don't know what it is. We're registered Massachusetts tree farmer. We planted 12,000 trees that we got. We were going to plant. We were going to go up to 20,000 trees, but my husband died, and I can't plant trees.
Right. So, like I say, this was something that I was on this county committee for 9 years. Prior, and you automatically have to, after a 3-year term, you automatically have to be off. They have a rotation system
mm-hmm.
in the field because this gets new people, new ideas within the county, which I think is good. But after this, I was appointed to this state committee, and we do meet at least once a month in Amherst. That's where the state office is.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm going there tomorrow.
You are? It's a nice place to go to. My husband went to college at Amherst.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, this government building, which houses FHA, ASCS, SCS,
mm-hmm.
the whole bit extension is all right on Carter Street, right close to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And we do hold our monthly meetings there
mm-hmm.
because we do have to travel around in different counties and attend some of their county meetings. actually what happens, the federal government funds an appropriation for the agricultural department, and the money that comes down to each state is then allocated to the state office, and the state committeeman then will break down the allocation to the counties,
mm-hmm.
depending on their needs.
Mm-hmm.
And we oversee these county committees as far as the county committee in the various counties are the ones that actually determine and decide who is to get what and where the most practical need is for the amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the state committee actually oversees these different counties. Is actually the liaison between the county and the federal government.
Mm-hmm. So getting that's the way the government gets into the grassroots or into the people.
I think it is the most effective way, because actually the say is right at the grassroots. I mean,
mm-hmm.
the funding, of course, comes through Congress and is allocated out
mm-hmm.
to the different states. But
mm-hmm.
from the state level down, it's by farmer elected committee
mm-hmm.
who make the final decision of where this money is best to be spent. And
mm-hmm.
Of course, I have to agree. There's no one who would know, like anyone that's living right in the county,
where
the need is and where this money should be, rather than having some bureaucrat from Washington come down and say, "Well, we'll
take
so
one look."
Right.
And
that's it. So that, and I think in the county, you know most of the farmers and their problems and so forth. And I think it's about the fairest way that any federal money is spent on this type of a system.
Mm. I thought it was interesting what Mr. Madeira said about the fact that there was more farmland here in Westport than in any other community in Massachusetts. There weren't more dairy farms.
There are more dairy farms, yes.
More
in
dairy
farms.
In
any
number.
State
not
in
necessarily
any
the greatest
state.
Number of cows,
right.
But...
the number of individual farms,
mm-hmm.
yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
It is the largest. Dartmouth was, Amherst was first one time, Dartmouth was second, Westport third. But now Westport is in first place as
mm-hmm.
well as the number of farms. And we do have quite a few growing dairy farms in this town.
I can remember that when I asked people about other times, other places, we were raising, it wasn't cattle that was our first, it wasn't dairy farming. It was another kind of farming that was being done on the whole.
In Westport?
In Westport.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think, years ago, I just think that practically everybody had a cow or two
mm-hmm.
or three and sold the
mm-hmm.
whatever milk they couldn't use.
Mm-hmm.
But I think primarily then everyone raised vegetables of
mm-hmm.
some type.
Vegetables.
And
mm-hmm.
Right. And
mm-hmm.
of course, wood, again, was another product
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
a lot of people really don't consider as a until they sit down and think about it. They don't think of it as an agricultural product, but it is.
Oh, boy, is it.
It definitely is. And there was a lot of wood. I remember I didn't really do much of it myself. I did have to keep the wood box full during the winter months as a child, but I remember my father.
Oh, boy, all the way down there, our trees are growing so tall. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of wood used in Westport and a lot of wood hauled into Fall River from Westport. Firewood
mm-hmm.
such.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the firewood, the vegetables, I think the milk was more of a sideline
mm-hmm.
in a sense
mm-hmm.
Years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything I should have asked you that I haven't?
Well,
anything you should have told me that's important that I've overlooked? Or that you've overlooked or we've overlooked? You've done a wonderful job of just telling me things, telling the tape things, telling the town things. These are all going to the library.
Right offhand, things just seem to come to you as you go along
mm-hmm.
and just sit here and talk.
Mm-hmm.
But all I can say is I do.
You do like Westport.
I like Westport.
And
I was born here, and unless something really happens, I plan to stay here until I die here and get better.
That's what I planned. I wasn't born here. I was born in Ohio. And so was my husband, but we adopted Massachusetts because we liked it. It was because he came to college in Amherst, and then I came here because he wanted to come here. What do you think about this business that people say that we're too big now for a town meeting form of government?
Sometimes I wonder about this, but at some other surrounding towns, in fact, the town of Dartmouth does have 20,000 population at present time, which is approximately twice our size, mm-hmm. population-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a representative, elected representative type of town meeting. But in speaking to the officials there, they have problems many times in getting the elected representatives to attend the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I wonder if sometimes this is the only way, and I think that this special town meeting, this vote on this lagoon just proved it. If you really have just one item of a real interest that the people are really concerned with, they will get out to a town meeting. I saw this again when the zoning of the town came in.
Mm-hmm.
They filled the auditorium and the hallways and everything else. In fact, they had one of the meetings there, they had microphones connected into other rooms, mm-hmm. because of the capacity crowd.
I think I called 76 people for this lagoon business.
Right. Well, for the actual, just a regular town meeting without any really hot items as such being on the agenda, the people just don't seem to have the interest. And I don't know what other means you could, how you could do this in any way. I think it's the most democratic way to at least run a government,
mm-hmm.
because if you put this under a town manager or a mayor in a council, the funds are there and they actually have the whole say and the whole control of, mm-hmm. just what they're going to do. And I think it's what is, and I'm not criticizing Florida, but I think what has happened in both Florida and New Bedford has really shown how some of these administrations can go out and spend so much, and now the people are paying for it because they're in a real, real financial problem.
Especially if you have crooked mayors and so on, as some of them.
It leaves it up to just a handful to really make the decision of how every dollar is going.
Mm-hmm.
Whereby in a town like this, every department has a line item budget, and you have to live by that line item budget. And if you want to change it, you have to go to the finance board and give reason for any transfer. And this is more or less of an emergency situation, mm-hmm. in order to get this. And this is where the individual living in town has the right to control the budget and tell you what you're going to do because they control the finance.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the fairest way that you could ever operate.
I do too.
And as long as you can get a place, can't turn anyone away. A registered voter has a right to go with us. And I don't foresee this coming for a long time yet by the number of people attending town meetings. I think we have auditoriums large enough to accommodate the people for them to make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
The only bad part about this, again, is the fact that many times the people do come in, they pick up this warrant, it's the first time they've looked at it, there might be 50 or 60 articles. They fully don't understand them,
mm-hmm.
which you can't blame them for.
No.
Even being there and seeing them way in advance, sometimes I don't understand them, so I can see this very easily.
Yes.
But I think, in fairness to them, it is difficult to make a decision and have to vote on some of these articles without really knowing the background.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that years ago they did have a taxpayers association which held meetings, asked the different department heads and officials to come in and explain a lot of these. It was a pre-town meeting type of thing, which I think was very good because, mm-hmm. again, the only trouble with this was the people who were interested and who would be going would go to these anyway, and they would know, but the people who had no interest, they wouldn't attend the pre-town meeting or the annual, so there again, they didn't know.
They didn't know anyway.
Because they weren't interested, they weren't concerned. Yes. But I think as long as we can keep this type of government, and I urge everyone, any person in town, any taxpayer or voter in town, that they should attend and get themselves involved. And this is the thing, you don't get involved by just going to town meeting once or twice a year. You have to be involved year-round, and then you know what's going on. And if there's any questions, I know my phone rings quite often, but I think that this is a good thing. I'm not saying anything as far as any pressure groups, but I'm talking about people who are asking legitimate questions and want answers.
Mm-hmm.
They know the different department heads, and they should call these people and find out prior to town meeting or voting go see these people, talk to them, and ask questions. I don't mean to argue, but just to ask and find out, and then make up your decision and go there and vote.
Yes. In other words, not try for special privilege or anything like that.
Nothing personal. No. Mm-hmm. But go get an be interested and know what's going on. And this is the most democratic form of government you can have.
Yes. You hear so many things. Of course, there's always gossip.
Oh, that's true. Sure,
and you hear so many things, and I don't know whether this is gossip or not, but I've heard from some that it's, for some people, it's easy enough to pass a PERC test, whereas somebody else has to go through a wait and go through a horrendous kind of experience, and that there's favoritism. Well, from most of the people I've heard connected with the town government, it's a very fair town government, and that isn't true.
No, I don't think this is true. There may be sometimes a waiting period as far as actually getting the thing done, because I think if you have the type of soil that they feel is wet and such, they naturally don't want to take this test in July or August when you have the driest condition. There are times in July or August where you could get a PERC test in the bottom of a dug well that has gone dry.
Yes.
But I mean, to be fair, of course, by digging in 8 or 9 feet, you can really tell with the water table, even though it is dry. But I think what they're trying to do is get these tests in a wet season and really get a true reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that this is always the answer, because sometimes land that does look wet or is wet to the eye will pass a PERC test. You just break through that layer of clay at times,
mm-hmm.
and you could get down into the nicest sand and gravel, which would leach away. And
mm-hmm.
really, the clay is what's holding the water on the top and
mm-hmm.
acting as a seal. So that you really just can't arbitrarily say
mm-hmm.
that because the land looks wet that it is wet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have seen, in my experience, not only being on the board but also farming, there are many times a piece of land that actually looks pretty good to you. You have a problem with, because it has this topsoil and then this clay,
mm-hmm.
and it just
and boy, is this clay? Is it hard?
Uh-huh.
A hard pan or something?
And it forms just like cement, so the
mm-hmm.
water doesn't penetrate.
No,
but you break that clay barrier,
mm-hmm.
and you get down into some real nice drainage. So
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they're trying to be fair. I think with the lot sizes today and so forth, and actually, all they're trying to do is protect the homeowner.
Yes.
Who's
yes.
Building, who, so
yes.
that they don't have a headache
yes.
over the years.
Yes. Of course, the roads, the highways like 88 and so on, have made wetlands of land that wasn't wetland
yes,
before,
that's
because
true.
Here we sloped all the way down to the river
yeah.
and we had perfectly good drainage. And
yeah.
now when they put 88 up and have this rise
yeah,
the
barrier.
Highway right there, it's a barrier, and the land right near 88 is now, I'm sure, I've had a test, but
yeah.
I'm sure it's wet because
well,
the drainage has just been
excuse me, that's true.
More or less stopped.
But I don't think there's any
there's no solution to it.
No, not in a certain way, but I mean, I don't think that any, really that any department in the town government is trying to give anyone the business in any way. I think they're all trying to be as fair, you know, as they possibly can.
Well, that's great. I'm terribly grateful to you for giving your time to this very busy time of yours.
That's all right.
And you know, you realize now, I brought this out. This, I want to say thank you and goodbye. Mr. Costa, I forgot to raise one of the questions that I meant to. I know that the cost of farm your equipment for your dairy farm is not little. Is it very expensive?
Yes, it's very expensive, and this is actually the worst part today. Years ago, you could start off maybe with a half a dozen cows and rent some land and buy some a horse and some equipment or an old tractor or something. But today, you have to have a volume. You have to buy all this equipment. a lot of this equipment you actually only use maybe, if you really figure it right down, 2 or 3 weeks out of the year in hours of mm-hmm. actual use, and you're spending thousands of dollars. And I think that, you know, practically any dairy operation today, if you were to start or try to take over a business like this, and anything that would be large enough to be profitable, you'll be starting out with at least a $100,000 operation, and then go anywhere up maybe to $200,000 or $300,000 investment.
Mm.
And the young person just out of school or just out of college has really, there's no way.
How can he do it?
This is what I'm saying. The only way that they could do this is if it's more or less is handed down, or they work themselves into a partnership with their folks, or if you have an older person who is gradually wants to retire and phase out, and he has someone interested and comes in and more or less works and buys into a partnership and gets started in this manner. Because other than this, there's no way that you could borrow this kind of money to even start.
No.
And if you could, you would probably never live long enough to pay it off.
No.
Because, you know, this kind of money, and this is the big problem, because I remember many of the people who are farming today, I remember many of them starting out in the town, and they started small and just gradually over the years kept increasing and kept mm-hmm. growing. Which you could do with that then, but today you just can't do it.
The farmers today really are rich men, in a way.
In a sense, if they might not have it in actual cash in their pocket,
but they're...
But for their real estate and their land and their equipment and cattle, yes. If they sell all of this, they really would, of course, the federal government would kind of take care of most of it. But I mean, what I'm saying, I think this is really one of the reasons why a lot of the younger folks just can't get into this mm-hmm. business today, because it is so expensive mm-hmm. to start. It's just terrific, and I really don't know what the answer to this is. But the only way they could is if they could rent the farm and then get this equipment in this manner.
Well, I'm glad we got back into that, because that really is a very serious consideration.
It certainly is.